Session number 9241, Alicia Gornowski, part 2.
I lost all my hair. I was very, very ill.
Did a doctor come to see you?
Yes. I remember my doctor came and he was himself very hungry. And he was talking to my mother what she should, how she should feed me, you know. But you could see that he was he was hungry.
So were doctors allowed to practice in the ghetto?
They were Jewish doctors, yes. Yes. It was a dreadful epidemic. And also, we had to hide, you know, from people that I was ill. Otherwise, they would send me to the hospital. And the whole apartment would be, how do you call it?
Sealed off?
Sealed off, yes. And people sent for quarantine to the hospital, which was very bad because they got it from other people, the illness. So, you know, we kept it quiet. Nobody knew that I was ill.
So people were trying to avoid going to the hospital?
Yes. People were dying in a hospital.
Would the Germans be seen much around the ghetto or not?
Yes. There were certain times they were coming in a big, as far as I remember, in a big van, you know, to a certain street and hitting people on the way. Or they were... I had personal experience. They were coming to ghetto as a joke, to make photographs. And they grabbed me once on the street. And they were grabbing very Orthodox Jews, you know, in those, you know...
Ringlets
and long coats, you know. And then we're making photographs together naked as a joke, you know. Somebody saw me when they... you know, called few young girls on the street, and somebody pushed me to the entrance of one of the houses, grabbed me from the German and pushed me, and I managed to run away. But so there were a lot of cases like that. I was very lucky that I ran away.
You mean some unknown passerby helped you?
That's right, yes. Few times happened that I was grabbed on the street and I ran away, you know, just luck.
And you didn't know the purpose for which they wanted you?
Oh yes, I knew that that was for photograph.
Did you see much of the Jewish police who were in the ghetto?
Yes. Yes, I was in contact with them. They were chosen, you know, to keep order. But afterwards, they had to select people. And, they had to bring every day a quarter of set of people to the Germans to be sent away.
What was the attitude of people in the ghetto towards the Jewish police?
Very bad.
In what way?
I understand now, being a grown-up person, that they had to do it because they had to save their own skin. If they wouldn't bring the certain amount of people, they would be taken, and their family would be taken first. But in some ways, you know, the way it was done, it was a very cruel way. They were taking children from mothers. I've seen it, you know. It was very dramatic.
So people thought they were unnecessarily cruel?
Yes. People became animals, you know. You know, now I understand that, you know, it was very difficult. Life was so difficult.
You mentioned the act of kindness of that unknown passerby who pushed you away.
Yes.
Was that typical of the way people behaved?
People were trying to help because people were trying to help, but still people were afraid. You know, if a German was approaching you, you ran away. You know, you didn't just face him.
But did people try to grab what they could from others, or did they try to help each other?
Well, in some cases people were helping each other, but in many cases we're so poor and so in such difficult circumstances that it was very difficult. I forgot to tell you that my father was once hit on the street, you know, and he was wearing glasses, and his glass was, you know, smashing to his eyes. All his face was bruised, and he was lucky that he didn't lose his eye sight. And from that time he was afraid to go out.
Who hit him in the face?
A German.
For no reason?
For no reason. It was no reason for it. So he became very frightened, you know, he was afraid to go out. I'm sorry if I'm talking chaotically, but, you know, I get emotional and I forget things.
No, that's all right. What about your mother? Did she go out?
She was stronger somehow, you know, than my father. She was before the war, and she was a very sort of modern woman for the time, you know. She was very, she played piano, she was very art conscious, you know. She had rather bohemian life. She wasn't very busy with us children, you know. She had her own life, and suddenly the war started, and she became very strong, and she could manage everything, which was unexpected. She took hard life much better than my father.
Was there more danger for men on the streets than for women?
For men, yes. Yes.
So the Germans would show a certain amount of respect for women, would they?
No, not the respect, but they just left them more alone, you know, than men.
You were talking about the work that you were doing, and you said that you changed from the clothing factory to...
to a laundry. For a short time. I was working there for probably 2 months, till the beginning of 43, I think. And then we started to talk about it, how to run away. My sister was taken already. No, there were not many... Actually, only three of us youngsters in the family. The rest was already taken to the concentration camps. And my father started to talk about it, how to get out me out from ghetto to save my life. Their policy was that young children is the future of the nation, and they should help them to run away, and also old people who couldn't help themselves. So they started to make arrangements with Poles how to get us out. I don't know if you heard the name of Ringenblum. It was a historian that was a friend of our family.
No.
Emanuel Ringenblum. They arranged for me to have a place outside the ghetto. My uncle had a girlfriend, you know, a Polish lady. And he sent her money, you know, and she probably rented an apartment where it was a hidden hatch, you know, sort of an entrance to the loft. And one night, my uncle and that Professor Ringenblum came to my, probably they talked to my parents, and one night they came and said to me and my grandfather, we're leaving. From 1 minute, you know, without any hesitation. I had no time to even to think or say goodbye. Just it took 5 minutes, I was already on the street. And I still got a guilt complex that I left my parents there.
Was this a systematic thing that
Ringenblum
was doing?
No, that was a very private thing.
So he only did it for you?
Yes. That was arranged for us. I left at night, and they were standing half a night with me near the, it was a, what do you call it, fence, you know, ghetto had a fence round ghetto, you know, and we were standing outside on the cemetery, and somebody came by the fiacre, you know, carriage on the other side. That was a man who was from Ukraine, and he was working for Poles and Germans at the same time. Everything was paid for, you know. That was, he was doing this for money. And, you know, he gave a signal, you know, and just they took me up over the wall together with my grandfather, and he grabbed us, put us into a carriage, and he took us to an apartment early in the morning where the young lady was waiting for us, you know, a friend of my uncle.
Do you know the dates that you got out?
It was 43, the 17th of January. And I'll tell you why I remember the date, because the 18th of January, 43, started the second action in ghetto, and they started to burn ghetto. The Germans started to burn ghetto and killing people again. That was the night before.
Was it a coincidence that you were got out?
Probably my uncle knew about it, what was coming, and then just grabbed me with his father and took me away. That was the last time I saw my parents.
Where was this place that you were taken to? Whereabouts in Warsaw?
The name of the street?
Yes.
Chłodna. Chłodna. Chłodna Street.
Whereabouts was that?
That was middle of Warsaw. How do you say? Not far from the ghetto.
And you say you and your grandfather were put in a loft?
Yes. That lady was living in the apartment, and during the day we were sitting on the loft, hidden, and at night we couldn't use the toilet the whole day. In the evening, she was coming in, sort of, you know, we could move a noise, you know, we could walk. So we came down, we ate something, and we slept in a proper bed at the time, for a certain time. I forgot to mention that with me came other things, like whatever we had of any value, because we had no money anymore. So things like some silver we still had hidden, and some things of sheets and expensive things we still had at home.
What were conditions like in the loft? Did you have straw?
Straw, yes. And we were sitting on it. And that was all.
What did you do all day? Was it
just sitting? We couldn't even talk, because, you know, people, neighbors could hear us. So we couldn't walk. We were just sitting the whole day.
So you must have been extremely bored, were you?
Yes. Well, it was nothing to do, you know. Not bored. I couldn't be bored. I was so frightened, you know. You couldn't think at the time, you know, couldn't think that you were bored. I was living in terror.
But how did you pass the time? Did you have some device, some method of...
Well, sometimes I was giving newspaper. Sometimes she brought us something to eat, you know, sort of killing the monotony. We had cards, could play cards. But, you know, you couldn't think, you know, you were so frightened all the time. And it wasn't a long time I was there. Afterwards, my cousin, younger cousin, it was another girl who was still alive, she came and joined us. So we were three of us hidden there on the loft.
How old was she?
She must have been at the time 14.
So younger than you?
Younger than me, yes. We were there a certain time, and one day the German came. They were tipped off by somebody, I don't know whom, that there were Jews there. And they came there, and they actually wanted not only to take us, but they wanted money.
So the Germans wanted to be bribed?
Yes, yes. And we managed to have still, we had some money still. I think that golden rubles, my grandfather had the money, you know, in a different apartment. Somebody was hiding the money for us. So that lady who was looking after us, she went with them to the apartment. They got the money, and they were bribed. They took the money, but they said, well, they won't take us away, but we have to disappear. We can't stay in that place anymore.
How many Germans, did the Germans come up to the loft?
They seen the loft, yes.
How many Germans did you see?
Three of them. I think that they were tipped off by a Pole. I think the two Germans and a Pole who was wearing a uniform, I don't know. You know, it's so difficult to remember now, after so many years. But anyway, they came, they took the money, and they said, they give us a few hours and we have to disappear from there. That lady had already different connections with somebody else, and they took me. A Polish gentleman came to fetch me, a young man, and they took me and my grandfather to a different apartment.
Before we talk about this new apartment,
yes.
Can you tell me what kind of Polish family gave you refuge in the first instance? What kind of job did he do?
What do you mean? The lady who looked after me.
Yes.
She was divorced. She was the wife of a Polish officer. They were separated. She was a girlfriend of my uncle. They knew each other before the war. And I think she was very much in love with him, and she did it for him. No, it wasn't for money.
So it was a middle-class family?
That's right, yes.
And what kind of a family did you go to next?
From there, you know, the gentleman came to fetch me by carriage, you know, and he took me to his own place where he was living with his wife and wife's brothers. That was also in Warsaw, near Vistula, near to the river. I came in, you know, and being a young girl, probably at the time I was a pretty girl, you know, he started to make advances to me. And he had a young wife, and my grandfather was very worried. You know, we were living in a room behind a wardrobe. It was an apartment of two rooms, and a third room was sort of camouflaged by a wardrobe. The back side of the wardrobe was taken out that we could get in, and it was a false door. And I was living there with my grandfather.
How big was this room?
A small, very small, let's say, like that. Just one bed, I was sleeping with my grandfather. And that the wardrobe was against the wall, the door.
Just a tiny little box room.
That's right. You know, he was calling me out, that man, you know, all the time. And calling me out, and he got drunk, and he was working as a sailor, I suppose. I don't remember what exactly, but he was a sailor, and he was showing me how he was climbing on the mast, you know, on the boat, or he was jumping from the mast, and he was jumping from the first floor to the street, you know. It's unbelievable things, you know. And the wife got very cross. She was, I don't know, jealous, and it was a situation was rather dangerous for me. My grandfather somehow got in touch through some friends with my parents. My parents were still in ghetto. He got in touch with them. They said, well, I have to be taken away from there because it was endangering me, endangering us, all of us. And so they decided to take me away to the apartment where the money was hidden. That was a third apartment. The owner of the place was a lady who, I tell you what was the connection. The man who took me, who helped me to get out from the ghetto, he was, before the war, he was a policeman. And he was, a part of his work, he was he wanted to make the street clean from the prostitutes. And he found that young lady, you know, on the street a few times, you know, and he liked her very much and became very friendly with her. That was the lady, you know, in whose life house I was living. She, before the war, she was just a prostitute. She got married, she had family, she had a mother and sister. And it was a normal family, you know. Anyway, I was living in her house. It was one room, the family was living, then I was in the next room, and in the next room was living a young lady who had a boyfriend who was in the German. And filthy Polizei, something, I don't know, a German fellow who was coming from the front. Each time he was coming, he was staying with her.
Did you see him?
No. I was there a very short time. I stayed there a short time, and one night, it was a knocking at the door, and the same Germans who came to the first apartment came to check the wardrobe if there was not more any more money. They remember that we had some money in that certain wardrobe, and that was the room where I was. I managed to jump out from the bed and to hide just behind the wardrobe. When they came, they opened the door of the wardrobe, and I was hidden there. They didn't notice me. While they went back to the first room, I jumped to the next room where the young lady was in bed, and she was wonderful, you know. She let me go under her eiderdown. And when they came to her room, she didn't say a word. The owner of the house explained that she has got a boyfriend, a German, and they saluted and they left her. And that's how I was saved at the moment.
What about your grandfather?
The grandfather stayed with the sailor in the house. I'm very chaotic in my story. I was told that my grandfather got a stroke being at that place. And they contacted, I think, my parents somehow, you know, through that little lady who looked after us. And they sent again money, and they wanted, he died. My grandfather died. And they sent somebody money to bury him on the Christian cemetery, to take him at night and bury him. And that sailor took the money, and he disappeared for a week. He went to some brother, or, you know, he disappeared for a week. They got him after a week. He spent all the money, and it was no money to bury my grandfather. Anyway, they said they manage. And one evening they sent me to get some beer, and I heard a story. The policemen were talking between themselves. They recovered a body of a well-known Jewish businessman from the river, from the Vistula, and that was I knew that was my grandfather. He was in a sack, and the water just washed him out. He was buried anyway, I don't know how, but that is unknown to me.
Had you got any false papers?
Yes, I had false papers. As Kazimiera Statkowska, that was my name. And it was after somebody who died outside Warsaw, a girl approximately my age.
And who got you these papers?
The Polish lady. You know, she got money from my uncle. That was everything arranged for me. I forgot to mention, while I was there, they started to my family, parents were still in ghetto. And they started to do the proceeding to get papers for me, South American papers. They found out that in Warsaw it was a possibility to exchange German political who were in South America to Jews, you know, I don't know what it was, the amount, you know, that one Jew for 100 people or approximately like that. But anyway, for money we could buy the papers. And my parents paid for it, somehow managed, you know, by selling things, jewelry. And they got the papers for me only. I was the first one.
These were papers for you to transfer to South America?
It was a Hotel Polski. It was a hotel where all the people were coming, and they were supposed to, in a transfer, to be sent to through Germany.
So these were visas, were they?
Yes. A lot of people came and paid for the papers, you know. At the day where I was supposed to come out, to go to the Polish, to the Hotel Polski, my uncle telephoned from ghetto. He had the possibility to phone her, you know, I don't know what was the arrangement. And he said, well, I don't want the child to come out today. Let her stay. If she's not well, let her stay. Or they find out something, or they got a fright. And that's why I'm sitting here, you know, because all the people were killed, especially South America. South American papers.
In what way were they killed? You mean rounded up by the Germans?
They were sent to the prison, and then later on to the concentration camp, they were gassed. It was a trick. They wanted to. They knew there were a lot of people who had false papers. They were on the Irish side, and that was the way to get them out.
So you were tipped off?
Yes.
Do you know the date when this attempt to get to South America occurred?
No, must have been 43, but I don't remember. I can't recall.